I'm Josh.
I'm Taylor.
We're the Andersons. And this is Young and in Love. Welcome to yet another episode of Young and in Love. I'm your co-host, Josh. We are back from a little bit of a break, unintentional break, but who's keeping track? This week we're going to be talking about strong relationships, as we hinted towards a couple weeks ago. Today is October 15th, 2018.
Yes.
And you're listening to the newest podcast about relationships. More specifically, the newest podcast about our relationship. The newest and only. This is our podcast. We did some research this week on strong relationships. We specifically looked at the professional world. So psychologists, podcast hosts. Who else did you look at?
I read a blog post by a girl named Whitney Virginia Morgan. She's not a professional writer. But I agreed with her blog a lot. And then I dived into the explanations behind Gary Chapman's 5 love languages.
We're going to wrap the whole episode up with the 5 love languages, because I also, during my studies, had some thoughts about the love languages. So that'll be the second half of this podcast. To kick it off, I found an article written by Elaine Strauss Cohen, PhD. She is a psychologist and blogger who teaches in the Department of Counseling at Barry University. She wrote an article called The 7 Tips to Strengthen Any Relationship, Advice on Strengthening Your Marriage Based Off of Empirical Research. She shares a story about when she was walking one day in a park and saw a elderly couple sitting on a bench, and she contemplated that lifelong love and how that affection pulled at her heartstrings. And she says that it's the kind of scene that all of us strive to live out in our own relationships. But then she says, a happy marriage that lasts until the end doesn't just happen by accident. It takes hard work and strong commitment. And then she poses the question, how do you end up as the couple sitting on the bench together instead of sitting in divorce court? As a brief background to her studies, she references a Dr. John Gottman, and he's got 7 tips, which he calls the masters in disasters of marriage. He has been studying these since 1973. And for those of you that can do quick math, that's 45 years. And based on his results, he is able to predict more than 90% accuracy which couples will make it and which won't, based on these 7 tips. The first one is to seek help early. He says the average couple waits 6 years before seeking help for marital problems. And keep in mind, half of all marriages that end do so within the first 7 years. This means the average couple lives unhappily for far too long. That also means that most people wait. Since they're waiting 6 years before seeking help, they wait until almost the very end, or like the very last straw, before they seek help. And obviously, anyone with an ounce of logic will understand that that isn't going to end up very well. So the common statistic that I thought of that people throw around about divorce is that 50% of marriages nowadays in the United States, it might be higher, because I've been hearing this for a couple of years, that 50% of marriages will end in divorce. So that means if half of those marriages end in the first 7 years, that means 25% of all marriages will encounter marital threatening problems in the first 7 years. Like 25%. It's guaranteed. Right. 1 out of 4. And that means it's 7. Half of those are going to either call it quits or not. And then if you can make it over that 7-year mark, you got one heck of a chance of pushing all the way to the end. Which is pretty cool. Number 2, edit yourself. Couples that avoid saying every critical thought when discussing touchy topics are consistently the happiest. Which, I know that you have a couple thoughts about this. So, I highly agree with this because when I was helping as a missionary in Brazil, one of the common trainings that I would receive is that you can't control others. No matter how much you want to help someone else, no matter how much you care for them, the only person that's going to choose what they can or what they will or will not do to get better is themselves. But on the teaching side, you can control yourself. So we can change ourselves. We can change to adapt to their situation, to help them. Not necessarily change who we are as a person, but change what we're doing and how we're trying to communicate with them.
Yeah, I like what you said there. And I think that's really important because when you adapt yourself and try not to change the other person, you're setting the other person up for success instead of tearing them down to try and build them back up again. When you try to fix yourself in order to help them, there's no like damage or destruction like done to the other person, like no hard destructive feelings, so they have a higher possibility of success. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. What I'm trying to say is you need to be able to look at yourself from a subjective point of view. You need to be able to evaluate what your core values are and the certain characteristics or attributes that make up your character. And you need to hold fast to those, but then understand your weaknesses and where you fall short and strengthen those in order to strengthen those around you. So you had a question about what I mean by core values.
Yeah. So are you talking about like core values, like characteristics such as like honesty, respect,
integrity,
buzzword, sort of like compassion,
okay,
like that kind of stuff, or are you talking about more like almost like moral type?
I think stuff? it's what if someone was to write a memoir about you, or if you were to describe yourself in 100 words, like a paragraph of 100 words, mm-hmm. What would that be? So what defines your character? So it could be things like honesty, or I'm a very integral person, all right? I have high integrity. I like to like treat others with respect. But it could also be like I really like making people laugh. And I really like to soften situations with humor, to sort of bring it back to the lighter side and remind people like why, or even remind you why you like me, you know?
Right.
And never lose sight of that, because that's when you start falling out of love, is when you start becoming a person different than who your partner fell in love with. And you'll start to forget why you love them in the first place. So it's really important to remember who you are, the definition of yourself, and what attributes define your character. So edit yourself, but only your weaknesses, and hold fast to your strengths. And strengthen yourself so then you can strengthen others around you.
I have a thought.
Okay.
Sort of not as closely related, but you said if you stray far from the values of like that your part that what that made up who you were when like your partner fell in love with you, then like over time your partner will fall out of love with you, or like start to fall out of love with you. I don't know. I mean, I believe that it is a thing. I like it could be a thing, but I don't know if I agree with it like 100%. Just because I think we all are able to control how we evolve, sort of, as like a person and like becoming like who we want to be. But I think certain things in life that like happen, or different like experiences, shape us in ways that are harder for us to control, or it's hard to like backpedal to like where you were. That I don't know if that makes sense, but what I'm trying to say is that like over time, like I think we're going to evolve. Like I think like you and I, when like if we look forward 10 years, we probably won't be the exact same people. And I think that has a lot to do with each, you and I shaping each other, just like ourselves, and
but for the better.
Yeah, but for the better. Yeah, I guess it doesn't have to be a negative. It doesn't have to be a negative thing. But I'm just like, I don't think we're going to be the exact same like two people that we were when we fell like in love with each other. I'm not saying it's going to be like a bad thing, but I mean, in certain circumstances, I guess it could be a bad thing.
The tip I'm trying to give is just be self-aware.
Yeah.
Okay. Of where you're going and what changes are occurring in your life.
So, like, always try to improve.
Yeah.
Yourself, never just get complacent.
Right. And don't just be self-aware enough to, one, not become complacent, because there's no such thing as plateauing as an individual. You're either getting better or you're slowly getting worse, because you're becoming more lazy and you start to lose habits, and that's just the way human nature is. The tip that I want to give, and that I want other people to understand, is that as we do change from each other, and as we experience or have more experiences in our life, we need to be self-aware that we're not regressing and going back to old habits.
Right.
Because, for example, if you go through a really tough time with self-esteem, I need to be there to help build you up and to be strong and to say, and to hold fast with you. If I started to think negatively of you and say like, oh, this wasn't the person that she was, and I start to sort of distance myself from you, that's me regressing.
Right.
And that's me becoming like less of a person, instead of realizing that you're going through a hard time with self-esteem, and I can do my best to help you like build yourself up, but in the end it's going to be you who believes in yourself, and I just need to be there and be strong enough for you, or maybe make myself stronger so that I can carry the relationship until you're in like the right state of mind or the right place to come with me.
Right. Going along with that, what you said at the first part, like building myself up and not you being like, oh, she's changed, all that stuff. I don't think anybody should ever purposefully they should just try to stray from thinking anything negative about your partner, just like in any relationship, just because if you're trying to like dig and find something negative or something that's not satisfactory or just like pleasing to you in any way, like I think you'll always be able to find something. Like if you look hard enough for anything, you'll find it. But like why would you purposefully like sabotage a relationship like that, you know?
Right.
So like I'm not gonna like, I don't know, think of a list of things that like you didn't do like yesterday that like didn't make me happy, or like just, I don't know, don't do that. One, you make yourself sad. Two, you get angry at whoever you're dating or married to or talking to, whatever. Like, three, it's not beneficial, like, at all. So, stop. Don't do it.
So, that goes really well with number three and number seven of John Gottman's, G-O-T-T-M-A-N. apostrophe S is list. Which number three is soften your startup in quotes. He says arguments typically escalate when one partner makes a critical or contemptuous remark in a confrontational tone. Bring up problems gently and without blame. And then number seven is focus. Oh, Taylor's going to say something.
Yeah, I had something on that. So I am studying to become a teacher. And I'm sure other people learn this too. But one of the things we learned in one of my earliest education classes is sort of related to active listening, if you know what that is. So you reiterate what you hear from the person you're talking to. In this case, like what I'm referring to, like children, but it can be to anybody, to like show the person you're talking to that you're listening and that you care and that you understand, and that like shows some respect and compassion and all this stuff. Really important for children. But we talked about, I think IU statements. So whenever like you are going to go say something to someone else, you to be respectful and like nice and show like caring and respect to the other person that you're talking to, you always start your statement with like, I feel this way because blank. Not like you make me. So do I, you, instead of you, me statements, if that makes sense. So like, for an example, I don't like it when you blank, I can't think of anything right now, because it makes me feel like blank, instead of
you make me feel terrible.
Yeah, instead of like, you make me blank because you blank 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 to me, or like whatever. Well, it could be whatever, but it shows, it's just better. I use statements instead of
you, me.
Yeah. If that makes any sense at all. Have you heard of that before? Is that just...
No, I've never heard of that. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well.
Didn't teach that in
If you don't
school.
Believe it's a thing, look it up. That's a thing. Actually, I should probably look it up right now to make sure that's right.
She's going to look up a source. I'm going to finish this list here. So, number three was soften your startup. So, bring up problems gently and without blame. Number seven, focus on the bright side. Says, when discussing problems, successful couples make at least 5 times as many positive statements, 2 and about each other, and the relationship as negative ones. So, for example, we have fun together instead of you never want to do anything. A good marriage must have a rich climate of positivity. Make frequent deposits to your emotional bank accounts. Number six sort of goes along with that. It's learn to repair and exit the argument. Says successful couples know how to exit an argument. After a fight, they repair by using attempts that include changing the topic to something completely different, using humor, saying a caring remark, like, I get this is a hard topic to discuss, establishing common ground, backing off. Gottman says, in marriage, as in the martial art Aikido, you have to yield to win. So, if an argument gets too heated, take a 20-minute break and agree to approach the topic again when you're both calm. I thought a lot about Lillian Marshall from How I Met Your Mother. They had a really good, obviously, it's a sitcom, but I think we, obviously, like, real people write these shows. Mm-hmm. So, they're valid points and valid relationships. Because they're coming from normal people's brains. And what Lily and Marshall would do is if things got too heated, they could be able to call a timeout, in which case they had to both completely stop what they were talking about, move on to the next thing in their day, and when they were both calm and in a positive space, they would come back and resolve the issue that they had earlier that day. And only one time in the entire series did they actually... Somebody tried to call a timeout and they just had to sell it right there because it was a very important topic. But every other time they had an opportunity to just let it go and back off, yield to one another, and then come back later to approach it from a more positive standpoint. And the last one, not on his list, but on my list, in my list of priorities, is to have high standards. The most successful couples are those that, even as newlyweds, refuse to accept hurtful behavior from each other. The lower the level of tolerance for bad behavior at the beginning of a relationship, the happier the couple will be down the road. Happy couples have high standards for each other from the beginning. So it's going to be hard, and it's going to be incredibly difficult, and probably from a stereotypical point of view, it's most often going to be the women standing up against the men, and then the men saying more hurtful things than the women. But it needs to be a two-way street. Both people need to refuse to accept hurtful behavior, because if we have higher standards and we hold our partners to higher standards of respect and communication, then it's always going to put us on the right road to repairing our arguments and to building this strong relationship that's bound on trust and respect, and not only good communication, as in frequent communication, but high quality communication and effective communication, where we not only speak our minds, but our partners understand what we are saying. Did you find that reference?
The one I was just talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah, so backpedaling to what I was talking about, they're just called I statements and you statements. So the statement that you always want to make are the I statements. So this example that I found, it's called first. So the first step, you start with I feel blank. So it could be I feel sad. Second step, when you do blank, or when you don't do blank. Third step, because I think it means blank. And you can fill it in with any of these blanks, with afraid, angry, hurt, jealous, sad, mad. The second step with a specific action, behavior, or request. And the third step, you can fill it with things like you don't care, consider, love, want me, stuff like that. So yeah, it takes the blame off of the other person, and it shifts, it focuses on your feelings instead of the other person's actions.
Awesome.
Okay, so this is a quote from Thomas S. Monson, who was the last prophet of our church, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And he says, "Choose a companion carefully and prayerfully, and when you are married, be fiercely loyal one to another. Priceless advice comes from a small framed plaque I once saw in the home of an uncle and aunt. It read, quote, 'Choose your love, love your choice,' unquote. There is great wisdom in those few words. Commitment in marriage is absolutely essential," close quote. And I like what he says there. Choose your love, love your choice. And I believe in that full-heartedly, that love is a choice. In the beginning stages of love, there's infatuation and just that, like, obsessiveness that you feel towards the person you start to become, like, romantically involved with. And over time, obviously, like, you get used to each other, like, things start to not become, like, as exciting as they used to be, and that infatuation dies down. And some people, I mean, I think what it's described as, what, the honeymoon phase?
Mm-hmm.
And once that dies down, some people think, like, oh, like, the love is gone. But no, love is not always a feeling. Like, you don't always feel love, but you can always choose love. Like, when you and I are, like, angry at each other or, like, whatever, I probably won't be feeling the most love towards you, but I still choose to love you. I still choose to do all the things I promised to do when I married you, because I love you, because I choose to love you every day. And in order to keep a strong relationship, you have to keep choosing to love your partner every day, every second, like no matter what. And probably won't always be easy, which I found another quote from that blogger, Whitney Virginia Morgan. And she shared a quote. I'm going to share two quotes and probably explain it a little bit. But she says, true love evolves. It doesn't appear spontaneously, but grows and develops. Mostly through two people working things out together. FYI, staying around is not the same thing as working it out. Only when you've been through trials and tribulations and to hell and back again several times with that person and made it out hand in hand, do you respect and admire each other. That is love. And then she talks again about how love is a choice. And when she says, you make a choice. You don't always feel love. Sometimes you have to wake up to that person who's disappointed you, let you down in a big way, perhaps. In that moment, do you think you're going to feel loving? You're not, but it's a choice. You choose to be kind. You choose to be sweet to them. You may kiss them on the forehead and tell them good morning. Have breakfast with me. You put yourself aside. You give despite your hurt feelings. It touches them, and then they will most likely feel like crap for being a brat to you and apologize, and you both can go about your day loving each other. See? Selflessness is a precursor to love. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think this is, for me, the strongest part of our relationship when it comes to my part. Because if it were up to Taylor, we would not have celebrated 7 months in the month of October, but we probably would have celebrated like a year and a half of marriage in the month of October. It took me a little while to come around, just because I knew that the person that I was going to marry, I wanted to marry and live with for the rest of my life. It was the only choice that I could see in my life that didn't have a reset button. You can always go back to school and choose a different career. If you buy a car you don't like, you can always sell it and buy a new one. If you don't like the meal that you bought, you can always send it back and get a different one. But I was not trying to send back my wife if she turned out not to be the one that I wanted. So I wanted to be absolutely certain that when I got married, it was going to be the one that I would live with until the end. And in our case, forever and ever. So whenever anything happens, I always remember that. And it's always the foundation upon which I built this relationship, is that I love Taylor enough today to try again tomorrow. No matter what happens today, no matter what she does, or no matter what I do, I am going to give my all to love her. And I choose every day to do that. It's not every day that I like doing it, and it's not every day that it's an easy choice, but I make the choice nonetheless, and I love her all the more for that. So I can only encourage everyone else out there to choose to love those around you and to choose to build strong relationships, whether it be with your parents or with your significant other or with your siblings or with your friends, to just choose to love them, not for what they do, but for who they are.
I was also going to say, the more you practice something, the more likely it's going to become a habit. So no, it probably won't always be easy choosing to love someone, but the more that you choose to love your partner, over time, hopefully, I would think it becomes a habit, right? Just everything you do is because, like, you love the other person. Like, the goal is right now is for everything, like, I do or you do to also benefit, like, you, or to benefit me, or to help each other. But over time, like, if you keep choosing to love, it becomes a habit, and anything you do naturally is for the benefit and uplifting of the other person. Love languages. You've heard of them. Some people, actually, I know several people in my life that think it's BS. They don't really agree with them. And I know some people that say there's more than five different love languages. Like, there's more than five, not just five. And I can see that. But anyways, Gary Chapman, he wrote a book called The Five Love Languages. And those are words of affirmation, which I think is actually number five, but whatever. Physical touch, acts of service, acts of kindness, gifts, and quality time. And all of us have different levels of importance for all five love languages, but some of them rank higher than others. And there was a quote, I listened to the Husband and Wife podcast, it's which is a great podcast. I think they're really funny and have a lot of good things to say. But they shared a quote on their podcast, or maybe it was their quote. I don't remember exactly. And they don't have provided the script for their podcast, so I can't go back right now. But they said, if you are married or in a relationship with your spouse that shares your same love language, then you're lucky. But you're also one of the very few couples to do that. So if you're like everybody else, if you or your partner does not go out of your way or their way to try and satisfy your partner or your love language, then there will always be some sort of dissatisfaction on either side of the relationship.
So this is going to be the topic of our podcast episode next week, because it's a really big topic and it's not enough to cover in one episode what builds a strong relationship. And as we look out to the future episodes that we have planned, this will be probably the remaining of a season one, per se, is all the things that we can think of that or all the things that we come upon during our research and our reading and our strive to be a better couple is what things make a strong relationship and what things tear down a relationship. That'll be a theme for the next upcoming podcasts. So next week we'll be talking about the five love languages by Gary Chapman. So if you guys want to sort of play along and follow along, you can go ahead and take that quiz for free online. To see what the ranking of your five love languages are. So that way, next week when you listen to the episode, you'll be able to follow along and sort of understand how you may fit into the five love languages and how you may be missing out on some much needed love in your life.
Okay, so I want to share a quote first. This is a quote by Thomas S. Monson, who is, was a leader in our church, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And he says, choose a companion carefully and prayerfully to when, and
go ahead.
So this is a quote from Thomas S. Monson, who was a leader in the church.
You should start that again. Just explain exactly who he is. It's your opportunity to testify that he was a prophet of God.
Okay.
So, hold on. Okay, go.
Okay, so this is a quote from Thomas S. Monson, who was the last prophet of our church, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And he says, choose a companion carefully and prayerfully, and when you are married, be fiercely loyal one to another. priceless advice comes from a small framed plaque I once saw in the home of an uncle and aunt. It read, quote, "Choose your love, love your choice," unquote. There is great wisdom in those few words. Commitment in marriage is absolutely essential. Close quote. And I like the what he says there. Choose your love, love your choice. And I believe in that full-heartedly, that love is a choice. In the beginning stages of love, there's infatuation and just that, like, obsessiveness that you feel towards the person you start to become, like, romantically involved with. And over time, obviously, like, you get used to each other. Like, things start to not become, like, as exciting as they used to be. And that infatuation dies down. And some people, I mean, I think what it's described as, what, the honeymoon phase.
Mm-hmm.
And once that dies down, some people think, like, oh, like, the love is gone. But no, love is not always a feeling. Like, you don't always feel love, but you can always choose love. Like, when you and I are, like, angry at each other or, like, whatever, I probably won't be feeling the most love towards you, but I still choose to love you. I still choose to do all the things I promised to do when I married you, because I love you, because I choose to love you every day. And in order to keep a strong relationship, you have to keep choosing to love your partner every day, every second, like, no matter what. And probably won't always be easy. Which I found another quote from that blogger, Whitney Virginia Morgan. And she shared a quote. I'm going to share two quotes and probably explain it a little bit. But she says, "True love evolves. It doesn't appear spontaneously, but grows and develops, mostly through two people working things out together." FYI, staying around is not the same thing as working it out. Only when you've been through trials and tribulations and to hell and back again several times with that person and made it out hand in hand do you respect and admire each other. That is love. And then she talks again about how love is a choice. And when she says, you make a choice. You don't always feel love. Sometimes you have to wake up to that person who's disappointed you, let you down in a big way, perhaps. In that moment, do you think you're going to feel loving? You're not. But it's a choice. You choose to be kind. You choose to be sweet to them. You may kiss them on the forehead and tell them good morning. Have breakfast with me. You put yourself aside. You give despite your hurt feelings. It touches them, and then they will most likely feel like crap for being a brat to you and apologize, and you both can go about your day loving each other. See? Selflessness is a precursor to love. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think this is, for me, the strongest part of our relationship when it comes to my part. Because if it were up to Taylor, we would not have celebrated 7 months in the month of October, but we probably would have celebrated like a year and a half of marriage in the month of October. It took me a little while to come around. Just because I knew that the person that I was going to marry, I wanted to marry and live with for the rest of my life. It was the only choice that I could see in my life that didn't have a reset button. You can always go back to school and choose a different career. If you buy a car you don't like, you can always sell it and buy a new one. If you don't like the meal that you bought, you can always send it back and get a different one. But I was not trying to send back my wife if she turned out not to be the one that I wanted. So I wanted to be absolutely certain that when I got married, it was going to be the one that I would live with until the end. And in our case, forever and ever. So whenever anything happens, I always remember that. and it's always the foundation upon which I built this relationship, is that I love Taylor enough today to try again tomorrow. No matter what happens today, no matter what she does, or no matter what I do, I am going to give my all to love her. And I choose every day to do that. It's not every day that I like doing it, and it's not every day that it's an easy choice, but I make the choice nonetheless, and I love her all the more for that. So I can only encourage everyone else out there to choose to love those around you, and to choose to build strong relationships, whether it be with your parents or with your significant other or with your siblings or with your friends, to just choose to love them, not for what they do, but for who they are.
I was also going to say, the more you practice something, the more likely it's going to become a habit. So no, it probably won't always be easy choosing to love someone, but the more that you choose to love your partner, over time, hopefully, I would think, it becomes a habit, right? Everything you do is because, like, you love the other person. Like, the goal is right now is for everything, like, I do or you do to also benefit, like, you, or to benefit me, or to, like, help each other. But over time, like, if you keep choosing to love, it becomes a habit. And, like, anything you do naturally is for the benefit and, like, uplifting of the other person.
Right. Yeah.
Which is cool. Which is a cool thought.
Right.
Which is why, like, you see that, like, 80-year-old, 90-year-old couple that's been married for, like, 50, 60 years, so, like, happy and just content with each other, because they've grown into, like, I don't know, such a beautiful couple. Well, I don't know. It's cool.
It's cool. Did you have other thoughts? Anything else you wanted to wrap up with? Five love languages.
Oh, all right. We should talk about that. So, love languages. You've heard of them. Some people, actually, I know several people in my life that think it's BS. They don't really agree with them. And I know some people that say there's more than five different love languages. Like, there's more than five, not just five. And I can see that. But anyways, Gary Chapman, he wrote a book called The Five Love Languages. And those are words of affirmation, which I think is actually number five, but whatever. Physical touch, acts of service, acts of kindness, gifts, and quality time. And all of us have different levels of importance for all five love languages, but some of them rank higher than others. And there was a quote, I listened to the Husband and Wife podcast. It's just a great podcast. I think they're really funny and have a lot of good things to say. But they shared a quote on their podcast, or maybe it was their quote. I don't remember exactly. And they don't provide the script for their podcast, so I can't go back right now. But they said, if you are married or in a relationship with your spouse that shares your same love language, then you're lucky. But you're also one of the, like, very few, like, couples to do that. So if you're like everybody else, if you or your partner does not go out of your way or their way to try and satisfy your partner or your love language, then there will always be some sort of dissatisfaction on either side of the relationship.
So this is going to be the topic of our podcast episode next week, because it's a really big topic and it's not enough to cover in one episode what builds a strong relationship. And as we look out to the future episodes that we have planned, this will be probably the remaining of a season one, per se, is all the things that we can think of that, or all the things that we come upon during our research and our reading and our our strive to be a better couple is what things make a strong relationship and what things tear down a relationship. That'll be a theme for the next upcoming podcasts. So next week we'll be talking about the five love languages by Gary Chapman. So if you guys want to sort of play along and follow along, you can go ahead and take that quiz for free online to see what the ranking of your five love languages are. So that way next week when you listen to the episode, you'll be able to follow along and sort of understand how you may fit into the five love languages and how you may be missing out on some much needed love in your life. We encourage you to take that quiz. We encourage you to like and subscribe to this podcast. Another thing is please give us a review on iTunes or share our podcast with those around you. The reviews help us because how the system works on iTunes is that the more reviews you have and the more comments that are made about your podcast, the higher you make it up on a list. So I think we're under like personal blogs or something, romance. I don't remember what our topic is, but how we move up the charts and become a featured podcast is through likes and comments. So as more people interact with the podcast, more people will be able to see it and we'll be able to help more people through our experiences. So please share it with your friends, your family, your significant others, so that everyone can feel more love in our life. And with that, we encourage you to take that quiz. We encourage you to like and subscribe to this podcast. Another thing is please give us a review on iTunes or share our podcast with those around you. The reviews help us because how the system works on iTunes is that the more reviews you have and the more comments that are made about your podcast, the higher you make it up on a list. So I think we're under like personal blogs or something, romance. I don't remember what our topic is, but how we move up the charts and become a featured podcast is through likes and comments. So as more people interact with the podcast, more people will be able to see it and we'll be able to help more people through our experiences. So please share it with your friends, your family, your significant others, so that everyone can feel more love in our life. And with that, we love you, we care for you, and we wish the best for you. Until next week, this is Josh.
And Taylor.
From the podcast Young and in Love. Have a great week. #younglovers.